America is in a race for its future. Our nation has abundant oil and natural gas to make us more energy independent. We have the advantage, but foreign nations want to fill growing energy needs and leave America in the dust, weakening our security and idling our economy. We can't let that happen. Let's harness America's energy advantage and secure our future. Go to lightsonenergy.com. Paid for by the American Petroleum Institute.
You're listening to the Oil and Gas This Week podcast with Mark LaCour and Paige Wilson. This is the show for busy oil pros who quickly want to keep their finger on the pulse of the industry.
You're listening to the Oil and Gas This Week podcast brought to you by API. This is the show for busy oil pros who want to quickly keep their finger on the pulse of the industry. Thanks for joining us for episode 345.
We were at OTC today.
We were. I'm exhausted.
Me too. It was a good time. Met a lot of people, met some new companies.
Got to meet a lot of our listeners.
Got to meet a lot of our listeners. Yeah, a lot of listeners came by and introduced themselves. A lot of people came by and didn't know that we were the podcast that we listened
to. Yeah, there was a sweet old man named Kenneth that came by and he was like, those people over there recording, I listened to their podcast. And I was like, are you talking about Oil and Gas This Week? He's like, yeah. I was like, that's me and that guy over there. He's like, you're the funny one.
You are the funny one. It was just a good time. Unfortunately, we're not able to be there all week because we're going to be at the BP Producers Forum this week. You and I will be doing a live podcast, and I'll be delivering a keynote. So if you hear this, it's already over with. Hopefully, you came and introduce yourself to me at the BP Producers Forum. Big shout out to those people out there from BP that invited us to come join them. This is going to be great.
Yeah, it's going to be a good time.
You know what else will be a good time?
Our mixer in Lafayette.
Good job reading what's in the show notes. All right, Industry Mixer in Lafayette, Louisiana. It's on Thursday, May 23rd. The link will be in the show notes to come join us. The charity, I believe, is a Veterans Association the money's going to. So if you're in that part of Louisiana, come join us. Come meet us. We'd love to meet you. It's going to be food, fun, drinks. Same thing we do here in Houston, just with a little bit of more spice.
Yeah, there you go.
And you know what else is fun?
Our second annual Pre-Stampede podcast and party mixer for Empower Alberta Energy.
Wow, you're right. So this is going to be our
second. Man, I'm on it today.
You're on it today. This is our second annual Pre-Stampede mixer, just like we do in Houston, Texas, and just like we do in Lafayette, Louisiana. This was in Alberta, Canada. So if you're in the Alberta area, Calgary specific, come join us. Now you got a little bit of time. This one is Wednesday, June 26th. The link is also in the show notes for that one. Last time we went, we got rained upon.
Well, not only that, but you, poor you, you're sitting there and then, of course, the only place there's a hole in the covering is right over you and then all the water fell onto your MacBook.
Yeah, but we still had a great time.
It was so good.
People. Like I said, if you're in Alberta or if you're going to be in Alberta Wednesday, June 26th before Stampede, come join us. That money is going to a charity for the kids of fallen police officers.
Awesome.
Yeah, so another great charity to support. Once again, we have food, fun, drinks. So no excuse. Find us here in Houston, our mixers here, or in Lafayette, or in Alberta. And we have more cities and countries coming soon.
Okie doke.
Want to read the review?
It's a 5-star. It says, hi from Hong Kong, cruising through the streets of Kowloon, tuning into your show. Excellent work, team. Keep it up.
Love it. Love it. See, you don't have to just write a whole paragraph. You can just say that you're hanging out, listen to Paige and I, and drop it in the reviews, and you get a big shout out on the show. Which, by the way, the easiest way to do that, this is the links in the show notes, just click on it. You can leave us a review, even if you're not an Apple person.
Yeah, that is right. All right. Well, let's get into the news stories for this week. First one up is Trans Mountain Pipeline expansion gets green light to open for May 1st.
Okay, so they're already flowing.
Right on.
Congratulations. We have been tracking this, which seems like a decade. And I know it hasn't been going on that long.
Well, this podcast hasn't been around a decade.
That's true. But this pipeline project started in 2012 by Kinder Morgan Canada because of the anti-oil and gas protests and the anti-oil and gas government, I have to say, unfortunately. Prices were driven up ridiculously to the point that that Kinder Morgan was having trouble making it cost justified. Then to make it even worse, the local environmental groups got the local indigenous tribes involved, both opposing this pipeline expansion, which basically is going from Alberta to the British Columbia coast. Then between the pushback from the environmental groups, indigenous tribes, the cost overruns, it went up from a $12 billion a year project to $34 billion a year. Then the federal government bought it to finish it. And it's just been one thing after another after another. Today is Monday, May 6th, and I am proud to say that pipeline is up and running and flowing. Now, the first true shipment won't actually go through for another couple of weeks.
Yeah.
But the pipeline's up and running. So congratulations to everybody, including the government, the Canadian government that has a role to play in this. I give governments thumbs down. They do a bunch of crappy stuff, but I give them props. They do good stuff. This pipeline is needed. This expansion is going to bring jobs and prosperity. It's also going to help make sure that the clean hydrocarbons that Canada produces gets used in other parts of the world instead of dirty hydrocarbons that some parts of the world use and look the other way. So this is good news. I would have lost money on this. I can't believe this thing's actually lit and up and running. Congratulations to everybody that stuck this out. Job well done.
Right on. Okay. Next up, U.S. oil and gas production rebounds after winter storm.
Yeah, so this is May, and you would think that the winter storm that we had in most of the middle part of the country and all the way down here to parts of Texas in the beginning of the year would have not affected production for this long, but it did. So you had a lot of infrastructure freeze. You had a lot of supply chain issues getting parts and pieces to repair stuff. Finally, the production has rebounded from that really bad storm in the beginning of this year. We went a little bit over 500,000 barrels per day in February, which was the opposite of the decline we had, which is, I think, about 7 million barrels a day we lost, or 0.7 million barrels a day. But now that everything's restored, everything's starting to come back online. Production is up. Production is up actually from all 48, lower 48 states, not just here in Texas. And then what's happening now is the market's starting to regulate U.S. oil production because of supply and demand. Right now, we're in a little bit of an oversupply, so prices are kind of staying low. However, everybody has their eyes on what's going on in the Middle East.
Right.
And if something takes off there, our production is at the point now where we can easily ramp back up and try to keep prices
thank
low
goodness
for the world and also make some money for these operators who've had a really bad decade. We had a great last couple of years, right? But the last decade was really rough. So we're going to keep an eye on this, but it's just good to see that our production is back to where it needs to be, both liquids and natural gas.
Yeah. Okay. Governor Polis announces major oil and gas truce in exchange for transit funding.
This is an article that normally I would come down on the Democratic governor in Colorado. I'm not. I think this is a good compromise. And there's a couple of reasons I think it's a good compromise. The first being that both sides say it's not a good compromise. So the environmental groups saying it's not a good compromise. And the Oil and Gas Association in Colorado saying it's not a good compromise. And when both sides say that it's not a good compromise, that's usually when it where it should be, the negotiations are like right in the middle. Basically, what they've done is there was a whole bunch of anti-oil and gas regulations on the ballot. I mean, a lot, like over 30 different measures out there. And they could have went ahead and tied up the government's time to go through all these measures. Some of this would have been brought to the court. It would have been tied up for years, if not decades, which would have ended up causing a prospective ballot war between the oil and gas industry and the environmental groups very soon down the road. And so what they're doing is they're basically killed a whole bunch of air quality legislation, which is quite frankly written to put the oil and gas industry out of business.
Exactly.
No matter what anybody else says.
Right. Yeah.
And what's happened to the oil and gas industry, instead of having to deal with all of that, is they're actually adding a different layer of costs, some fees, and that fees is going to generate around $138 million a year for the state of Colorado. And then 80% by law of that new revenue stream from these extra fees is going to go toward public transportation across the entire state, including rail. The other 20% is going to go to support the parks and wildlife conservation. I think this is a fair trade. Regardless of what your personal beliefs are about the oil and gas industry, you have to understand that right now in 2024, in the Western world especially, we have a lot of opposition to oil and gas. Whether it's justified or not, it's there. And those people and those organizations have the ability to vote, just like we do.
Right.
They have the ability to spend money to lobby, just like we do. And sometimes, instead of trying to make sure the other side understands that we're right and they're wrong, sometimes you just have to grit your teeth and come to a compromise. Coming to a compromise, I think, is something that has been missing from both our federal government and our state government.
Oh, absolutely.
For a while.
Yeah.
Even though I don't necessarily
agree. It's all about votes.
Yeah. Even though necessarily I don't agree with the Colorado government and a lot of their politics, especially when it comes to the oil and gas industry, I think this is a fair compromise. Like I said, I think it's a win-win for everybody, especially because both sides say it's not. Now, no joking. I'm trying to be very serious here. The environmental coalition that's saying that it's not fair, including the normal characters, Earth Justice, Sierra Club, Earthworks, Western Resource Advocates, Healthy Air and Water Colorado, Southwest Energy Efficiency Project. But here's a new one that I haven't seen, another environmentalist group, Green Latinos.
Whoa.
Green Latinos.
Latinas or Latinos?
Latinos.
Oh.
So we now have a new environmental group. We need to, maybe I can get the Green Latinos on the balance point. Maybe they're one of the few environmental groups that actually talk to me.
Maybe.
I'm actually going to reach out to them. I haven't seen this environmental group before, but like I said, I think this is a fair compromise. It's going to allow the oil and gas industry to continue to function. We're going to lose a little bit of profits, and that profits is to go to fund mass transit in the state and actually go to the Parks and Wildlife Division. So I think this is
a good deal. So why are they complaining if it's going to the wildlife? Well, the
oil and gas industry says it's too much. It's already too expensive to operate in Colorado. And
well, yeah, now it is. Yeah.
But I've said for years, the market is what rules out no matter what.
Right.
So this agreement has come together to quit from having to go to court and having some major court battles, legislation. The oil and gas industry can still operate, make a profit. The money goes to some funding that the environmental groups like. And then the mass transit is good for everybody. And like I said, if the market pushes it the right way, and this isn't a fair agreement, the market will overrule the agreement. Just give it time. But right now, considering the way politics are in Colorado, I think this is a very fair agreement.
Okay, so next up, we have Chevron CEO sees Exxon arbitration resolved in coming months.
If you don't know what's going on, Chevron and Exxon are in court, sort of, over a Ghana oil contract. And it basically has to do with a big fine. Now, remember, both of these companies are fierce competitors. It's one of my big beasts. When people talk like big oil is something negative, they always say that these companies are in collusion together. These companies aren't in collusion around anything. In fact, this is basically a contract disagreement. What they're doing is they're going to arbitration, which is usually the first step. It's usually right. A clause. We actually have that in our contracts as well, where instead of going to the cost of going to court and the lengthy time it takes to get a decision, you agreed to have your case arbitrated by experts. Basically, the big beef is this. Exxon's acquiring Hess. By acquiring Hess, they're acquiring Hess's contractual obligations to this Guyana contract. Chevron's saying that's not fair because the way the contract's written is that you have to be an owner, not acquire ownership of the contract. So this is contract legalese. I'm not an attorney, although I have played one on TV more than once. I've actually played one in real court more than once and actually won. Once again, though, I'm not an attorney, so don't take legal advice from me. But I think Chevron is in the right place here. Both Chevron and Exxon has appointed one arbiter. They'll go to a three-person panel who will basically decide this case. I think Chevron's in the right now. If I was Exxon, I would be pushing back against this too, because I just bought a company that had the contract that I wanted. So I can see Exxon's side as well. So let's see what happens with this arbitration process. We'll get a decision rather quickly around this.
All right. Shell exits China power market businesses.
Wow, Shell, you're getting out of the electrical business, and you're already starting to get out of the renewable business. Hmm. And you're starting to put your money, instead of in renewables, into things like natural gas and oil business. I think that's smart, Shell. Should have done that a couple of years ago. Anyway, Shell's exiting the power value chain in China, which is power gen or generation trading, and then marketing the power. When I say power, I mean electricity. They're taking that investment out of their power portfolio, which they like to call it, and put it into their hydrocarbon portfolio, which I think is a smooth move. Total transparency, I'm also a shareholder in the Royal Dutch Shell.
Of course you are.
Yeah. Now, one of the things they're not removing money from yet is their electric vehicle charging business. And just 2 or 3 weeks ago, I would have said that's a bad move. You need to get out of that because, like I said, in my predictions for last year, EVs, the growth is basically dead.
Right.
It's not going to come back for a long time. When it comes back, it's going to be a different configuration, most probably electric motors and fuel cells. Anyway, that's down the road somewhere. However, Shell is keeping their electric vehicle charging, and you go, well, that doesn't make sense. That's not a good asset to make profits. However, have you paid attention about what Tesla's doing with their superchargers?
Mm-mm.
Tesla fired their entire supercharging team.
Oh, really?
What's interesting about that, if I don't know if you remember this, but when Ford first introduced electric vehicles recently, the second time, they were going after Tesla wide open. That's why they've lost so much money. Ford is selling electric Mustangs, what do they call them? The Mach-E, and then the Ford F-150 Lightning. at a loss just to try to take market share away from Tesla. Hmm. And in the beginning, Ford had their own charging stations that they worked out with a bunch of dealers across the U.S. to charge these Ford electric vehicles. However, at some point, I guess about a year ago, Ford gave up on that because they couldn't get enough market penetration, and they worked a deal with Tesla to use the Tesla chargers for the Ford vehicles. And you're going, Mark, why does it matter where you charge it from? Because the money's not in the electricity. The money is in the data. What you don't know, EV owners, if you read the fine print of every electric vehicle you've bought in this U.S., whether it's a Nissan Leaf or a Ford or a Tesla or a BMW, the automobile manufacturer owns the data from your car, not you. So every time you plug into a charger, it downloads that data and sends it back to corporate. Now, on the surface, that data could be used for very good stuff, helping improve the software, helping make the vehicle more efficient, figuring out where we need more charging stations, all that sort of stuff. However, I think they're going to monetize that data down the road like everybody else has, Google, Facebook, whatever. By Shell staying in the electric vehicle recharging business, I think it's actually a smart move, especially since it looks like Tesla is not putting the money in to grow their supercharging network. So let's keep an eye on this. It could be an accident. It could be an oversight. It also could be a very strategic move by Shell in getting out of the renewable business, but keeping that ability to use that data as a separate revenue stream.
Okay. U.S. FTC set to rule on $60 billion Exxon Pioneer deal, Bloomberg reports.
So let me give you a short version. The FTC said, okay, this Pioneer ExxonMobil deal can go through. However, we have one caveat, and that caveat is that the former CEO of Pioneer, Scott Sheffield, cannot be on Exxon's board. And you go, well, why the hell would you do that? This guy's a genius. And FTC says, well, back in the past, we think Sheffield cooperated with OPEC to manipulate the price of oil in the oil market. And you go, That's a horrible thing. I can't believe Sheffield did that. He didn't, people. The messaging that the FTC is talking about with OPEC was public. This was during the downturn, right during the pandemic, when it was all heck breaking loose. And everything at Sheffield messaged with OPEC was public. He wasn't colluding. He was trying to get information to help his company and his employees and his people. I don't know what's going on with you, Federal Trade Commission. This is obviously not collusion. I mean, a kindergartner could figure out this is not collusion, trying to manipulate the markets. And let's say these messages weren't public and you could say, well, maybe he was trying to do something secret. Do you think OPEC's going to listen to Sheffield? And do you think Sheffield's one company, Pioneer, can produce enough oil to actually leverage what OPEC can produce?
That makes no sense. Yeah.
I don't know what Darren Wood, the CEO of Exxon, is going to do about this. I got a feeling he's going to agree to it and go ahead and let the merger happen. He won't allow Sheffield on his board, but I promise you, Sheffield's going to sit on some other boards.
Yeah, no kidding.
He's too much of an industry expert.
Right.
Too much experience. He's run too many companies. He's done too great a job. I would love to see him on the board of Exxon as a shareholder. Once again, all transparency. I'm a shareholder of ExxonMobil. But I think this is what they're going to have to do to make everybody happy. And normally, I would say this is a political move by the people that don't like the oil and gas industry. It's not. I don't know what's going on with the FTC. I don't know why they're overreaching and making something seem way worse than it is. I have no idea. If I find out, I'll let you know that one of the
I'm sure it has something to do with votes.
I don't think so.
You don't?
No, I really don't. I don't know what it has to do with, though. I'll let you know. And I could
be wrong. It seems a little suspicious, though.
It's very sus.
Very sus. Okay, so next up we have Lib, Olin, Dow, ExxonMobil, Chevron, rollout Q1 reports for 2024.
Who do you think Lib is?
Well,
I know Basil.
Oh, well, that's
all their stock tickers.
Yeah.
Short version of this story, all of these major petrochemical companies have released their Q1 reports for 2024, basically showing their financial performance and earnings, and everybody's kicking butt and taking names. The world needs petrochemicals. The world will continue to need petrochemicals. The demand for petrochemicals are going to go up. The cheapest and most environmentally responsible petrochemicals in the world are made here in the U.S. by some big players like LyondellBasell, like Chevron, like Olin, like Dow, like ExxonMobil. All of their petrochemical businesses are doing well. The one thing I am a little bit concerned about is both Olin and LyondellBasell has focused on something they call the CLCS business. And CLCS is circular and low carbon solutions. So basically think of it as low carbon solutions, and then the ability to recycle plastics, the circular
part, okay, right? Yeah.
The circular low carbon solution, CLCS. There's a lot of talk about low carbon solutions. There's some actions out there, but none of them really are at scale. And just like a lot of the renewable business that was propped up with subsidy money or tax breaks, a lot of this low carbon business is done too around the world. And here in the US, it's being propped up by the Inflation Reduction Act, the IRA, which will go away regardless of who wins the US presidency in our next election.
Thank God.
So I'm not so sure these companies should be investing this much of their limited resources into low carbon solutions and recycling plastic. Now, the recycling plastic, I think, is different. I think that's an undertapped market, and I think it actually be extremely profitable with no subsidies. We need to do a better job of actually collecting the plastic, separating them, and then bringing them to the companies that are able to do this. And we've talked about this on past shows. There's a handful of companies that are now recycling plastic, which I think is good for everything. You'll hear a lot of people talk about the problem with microplastics. Microplastics is real.
Yeah.
It's all over the place. But as far as I can tell, it's not a problem. But it's something that if we can keep out of environment, we should. I believe that 100%. And so being able to recycle these plastics is just good for everybody. And like I said, if you look at the business case, recycling the plastics and doing it profitably is not something that's in vitro. It's not something that you can only do in a lab. You can do it at scale. It just, we need some help gathering up the plastics. And I think we can do that, which is basically a cultural change. If you're here in Texas, shoot, what was that? 25 years ago that they started with Don't Mess with Texas. And before they started
that, God, I feel like it's longer than that.
Maybe. It's been a while. But before they start that public service campaign, the Texas roads were kind of dirty. People threw out beer cans and burger wrappers and everything. And you come here now, our roadways are spotless. Not because,
I wouldn't call it that.
Do you even remember how bad it was? I mean, it was horrific.
Seen mattresses on the side of the road.
Yeah.
Well, no, even now, but also Houston. So there's that. It's not that bad, like rurally.
Okay.
Anyway.
So my whole point is we were able to take an enormous state like Texas and by just a good marketing campaign change the culture where people didn't throw their trash out the car door. It used to be normal. It used to be socially accepted that while you're going somewhere and you had trash, you just threw it out the window. And now we've changed that. I think we could do the same thing with plastics, which would then make this circular plastic recycling work like a charm and actually make money, which is what it needs to do to make a difference and to keep the process going. I'm not going to get into the details of what the financial performance of these companies were. Let me just tell you, they kick butt. They did really well.
Up next, we have U.S. Appeals Court upholds FERC approvals for gas pipeline expansion.
You know where this pipeline is?
Where?
It's in our home state. It's in Louisiana, going to Mississippi.
Okay.
M-I-S-S-I-S-S-I-I-P-P-I. I remember how to spell
it. Oh, good job. You can spell.
So basically, the environmental group Sierra Club and Healthy Gulf, although the Green Latinos were not involved with this, I wonder why. The one of Sierra Club didn't call them. Anyway, Sierra Club and Healthy Gulf brought up a lawsuit back in 2022, basically saying this new pipeline infrastructure is going to cause a massive release of greenhouse emissions. It went to court, and the court said, it's not a new pipeline. It's an expansion of an existing pipeline.
Ha ha.
And the pipeline's kind of airtight. So Sierra Club and Healthy Gulf, show me again how this is cause a massive release.
God, it's always
of
something
greenhouse gases. And Sierra Club and Healthy Gulf came back and said, well, when they have a rupture, and the court came back and said, okay, can you show me on the calendar when that's going to happen? And Sierra Club said, not really, Judge. And Judge says, get out of here. By the way, I'm paraphrasing what actually happened in court, but that's really how.
Actually, I would pay to see a judge say something like that.
Anyway, so the environmental groups were basically taught a little bit of a lesson by the courts in Louisiana. Kinda Morgan is allowed to continue this project. And this is a major project, part of the LNG export capacity is building out in the, I say the Gulf of Mexico. LNG export in the U.S. right now is Texas. And there's some other LNG export facilities. I get that, right? But what's happened is our neighbor state, Page and I's home state, Louisiana, is in competition. And they're doing a lot of the right things. They're deepening some ports that weren't deep enough to get these big vessels in. And they're putting a lot of state money. They're providing tax breaks and subsidies to bring this LNG business to Louisiana. And I actually love this. I like to see the two governors compete for LNG business, because it only benefits everybody, including the rest of the world. So by competing for LNG business, you could drive the cost of LNG down, which makes it cheaper for the rest of the world to buy, which means they're not burning wood or cattle dung or coal for fuel. So it's a win-win all the way around. So sorry, Sierra Club and Healthy Gulf, that you lost this in court. Maybe do a little research next time before you spend money litigating against the pipeline.
Yeah. All right. Australian researchers testing SAF production from landfill gases.
SAF, our industry does not have enough acronyms, so we need more. Remember, SAF is sustainable aviation fuel. You've heard me talk before about how a lot of sustainable aviation fuel originally was made from used cooking oil, which I thought was great because used to be that stuff was just thrown away and you had to pay somebody to pick it up. Now it has a value add to it. Companies sell it. It's like the French fry oil at McDonald's. However, there's not enough used cooking oil to even come close to provide enough sustainable aviation fuel. So now they're making SAF from things like palm oil, which adds to the destruction of areas of the world that you can grow palms in. However, they're doing something different here. So if you don't know this, when you have a landfill, which is the way that we dispose of garbage, and by the way, even if you have a recycling bin in the U.S., the odds are the recycling bin is still going to a landfill. That's a long story in itself. But if you don't believe me, Google your local trash pickup company and see where their recycling stuff is going. It's really kind of a shame. But anyway.
It's kind of trickery.
Well, it started off as not trickery. Where are we going to side channel here? When all that started in the U.S., the recycled goods were put on barges, shipped to China, and China were able to pay people an hourly wage to sort through them and sort the different plastics and glass.
Oh, yeah, that's right, because it's different.
And that's the cost of recycling. But as the cost of living went up in China and as inflation went up around the world, I'm not going to get into why that happened, it started costing too much. So it doesn't make fiscal sense to send our recycling stuff to China, and you can't get it separated here because what you would need to pay somebody is around $1 an hour, which people won't work for here, plus it's illegal. Now, most of your recycled stuff that used to be recycled is not being recycled. It's being sent to landfills. Anyway, this company in Australia has figured a way to take these landfills. And they basically, when the landfill is done right, it is sealed from the environment underneath so nothing can leak out with layers of clay and plastic with all kinds of sensors. And then lately, they've been covering them and capturing the gases that come off of that, which is mostly methane. And you can use that for fuel, which I think is fantastic. I mean, it's already a waste pile to begin with.
Right. Yeah.
Why not use the waste products that's naturally going to be generated for something else? I love that type of idea. But what they're doing here is they're taking that same methane that's coming off these landfills and they're using a laser to create high energy electrons in normal atmosphere, in that methane condition, which is causing the normal carbon dioxide in the air to bond with the methane to make aviation fuel, which, by the way, is how hydrocarbons are made by nature anyway. Plants do it through photosynthesis. We're doing it here with a laser and landfill. But I think this is great. Now, the only problem with this is that they've done it on a small scale. And like everything else, it has to be scalable. It has to be able to grow it. So we're not yet able to see if it works on a larger scale. However, they got it out of the lab and they got it on a real landfill and it's working in a real landfill. I love this. And the airline company is going to love this as well because now they get to still say they're using sustainable aviation fuel. However, they're not destroying forests by having to plant palm trees for the palm oil to make SAF.
Well, there you go. Okay, government to scrap windfall tax if energy prices drop.
This is the UK government and they're basically saying that this windfall tax, which is 75% on every dollar, which is really ridiculous. When you add all the taxes together, if oil drops below $71.41 a barrel for two consecutive quarters, and then natural gas falls 54 pence per therm, that was my British conversion there in currency and BTU measurements, they'll get rid of the windfall tax. One side, the anti-oil and gas side, said that's not fair. The oil and gas companies, or the fossil fuel companies as they call them, made too much money the last couple of years. They need to pay their fair share. Quite frankly, UK, if you don't scrap this, you're not going to have any oil and gas production in the UK. And you have to buy foreign oil and gas. We'll sell you the LNG. Unfortunately, because what's going on in Russia and Ukraine, your crude oils will come from the Middle East. I would rather you produce your own from the North Sea. But if you don't get rid of this windfall tax one way or another, you're not going to be able to in a couple of years. We'll see what happens. I think the UK government has figured out that if they don't do this, it's going to be worse in the future, regardless of what public opinion says. And even some of the public opinion is actually starting to change in the UK. In some ways, almost faster than it is here. You're having a lot more people quickly realize that adding cost and laws and regulations to oil and gas industry in the UK only raises energy prices for everybody, which helps nobody. This is good. They just need to hurry up and scrap that windfall tax.
Yep. You've been saying that forever.
Yep.
All right, last one. U.S. proposes offshore wind sails off coasts of Oregon and Maine because it worked in the Gulf of Mexico so well.
Well, that you just ruined what I was going to say about this article. So people in Oregon and Maine, I know your political persuasions and I know your views of the oil and gas industry. Here is your chance. Here's your chance to have the Bureau of Ocean Energy Management generate 18 gigawatts of offshore wind energy.
Ooh.
And that's enough to power around 6 or 7 million homes.
Cool.
So go ahead and vote to approve it. Then go ahead and pull you and your friends' resources and go ahead and buy some of these leases. Go ahead and build the wind farms and then go ahead and sell that electricity on the commercial grid. And let's see what happens. Bottom line, because Paige ruined this for me.
I'm sorry.
Nobody's going to buy these leases. Nobody. Nobody.
Did we cover the last lease sale?
In the Gulf of Mexico that nobody bought?
Well, yeah. Yeah. So there's the first one that someone bought. Second one, nobody bought.
The first one we covered, one company bought it.
And yeah, yeah.
They wanted to flip it. They had no intention of actually going to production.
Right.
But then they bought it and nobody would buy it from them. So they stuck with it. Then the second one, nobody even bid. All right.
Oh, man.
Paige and I are laughing because we know what's funny about this is the economics don't make sense because of our politics, quite frankly.
Yeah, that's really what it comes down to.
I love wind energy. I actually really love the idea of commercial drilling and production platforms being run by wind.
Yeah.
When you do wind offshore, nobody sees it. It doesn't mess up your view. Nobody cares. And the wind is constant, unlike it is on land where it only blows certain parts of the day. I love wind energy in the right places. However, it's not a cure-all. But economically, right now,
like it makes sense to do it on a platform where all the wells have been decommissioned. It's already an existing structure. You don't have to put anything else into it except for maintain it.
Well, they do have to do some more work. So there's different stresses on the structure when you have
big-ass wind sail
up there versus just trying to dock boats.
Yeah, I get it.
But anyway, I love all the renewables energy. The problem is two things. One is the public's been fooled that there's some type of universal cure-all, which they're not. They're just saying, actually,
it's like snake oil.
Well, wind and solar actually aren't energy. It's a technology that captures energy.
Yes.
Right? Hydrocarbons are energy. That's the big difference people understand. But the other thing is our world's politicians have pushed renewables too fast and the market can't adapt. And it caused this huge energy shortage that we're still in. So the market's going to adjust. Remember, the market always wins. And unfortunately, that adjustment means there's a lot of existing wind farms that are going out of business that won't be torn down, that are going to be eyesores. When that happens, which is happening right now, people are going to get sick of wind energy and they're going to have a very negative emotional connection to it and they're never going to want it again in the future, which is wrong. That's why I keep telling people in our world that don't like renewables, like you can't do that. That hurts all of us. You have to understand they work, but only in certain places. Don't be anti-renewable ever.
Right.
However,
I mean, I had this conversation with Braden on Industry Leaders today. So,
at OTC.
Yeah.
Anyway, I didn't realize you had that conversation. Anyway, Oregon and Maine, I'm looking forward to the success of your offshore wind auctions. I really am. I just don't think anything's going to happen.
All right. That's enough.
Speaking of that's enough, what you can't get enough of is our Sunday update newsletter where we're helping animals find their forever homes. We got really cool recipes in there. Probably in about 3 weeks, Turbo Talk will launch in the Sunday update. That's me and Amanda LaBrie's new podcast that is recorded inside my car.
When you have it.
That's another story. It might be another podcast.
We'll have to talk about that
behind the curtain. Yeah, if you want to hear what's happening this week with the Mark's car, there's something every week. You can listen behind the curtain.
Seriously.
So sign up for that newsletter. Link's in the show notes. Also, if you'd like to be notified about all the oil and gas events, conferences, and trade show, and often get free tickets that the public doesn't get, sign up for the oil and gas events newsletter. Links are both trade shows. Weekly rig count, page. Where are we?
United States is down 8 at 605. Canada is up 2 at 120. And internationally, we're up 7 at 978.
That's good numbers. Speaking of good numbers, go join our LinkedIn page. Actually, just go follow it so we get notified of everything that we're doing now and in the future. Merchandise. Our merchandise store is kicking butt and taking names. Was it last show that you fact-checked me live on the show that we're number one? We're number one in all gas merchandise.
Of course I'm going to fact-check you.
Our kids' clothes are selling like hotcakes. Our baby clothes are selling really good. And guess what we have coming?
What?
We have dog bowls.
Ooh, and that's
yoga,
cute.
Yoga pants for women.
I'm down for some yoga pants.
Yeah.
As long as they're high-rise, bro.
I don't know. But
somebody should be consulting me.
Well,
about
you'll see it before they get approved.
Okay.
Anyway, besides all the other oil and gas merch we have out there, we're gonna have a bowl for your pet, and we're gonna have yoga pants, and we have actually more stuff coming.
Don't we have a duffel bag that just came?
We already have two duffel bags up there, two gym bags, right?
Oh, cool.
And we also have a very high end, high quality paper notebook coming out. So if you're one of those people who like to take notes on real paper,
now I have to go look because it better be a spiral.
It's not. It's bound. But it's all top end stuff. Like
will like it.
We spared no cost. We literally have our listeners out farming paper in the rainforest, pulping it by hand. all our animals they were trying to find homes for are in there with their little feet stomping on the paper pulp, making it.
Okay, now you're being utterly ridiculous.
The whole audience has chipped in. Our audience has chipped in to help make this notebook.
It's, anyway.
It's top of the line, and it's not a lot of money. I think it's like $25 or something.
All right, close it out.
Wait, we didn't get to the rest of the stuff. If you'd like myself or any of our experts to come speak like we're doing this week at BP or bring a live podcast to your event, people love that. Reach out. Happy to share the details. First Friday Q&A. Audience, we need some more questions. You've kind of slacked off. I do realize that spring break just happened.
Not only that, it's the end of the year. Everybody's kids are getting out of school, graduations. It's a busy time. I get it.
Yeah, I get it too. We typically slow down with questions this time of year every year. But if you have a question you haven't written in, this is your chance to write in because we need them. There's a link in the show notes for that. You ready to get out of here?
Mm-hmm.
Remember, folks, do great work, pay it forward, and we will see you next time.
Tune in next week for another informative and entertaining episode of Oil and Gas This Week podcast, a production of the Oil and Gas Global Network. Learn more at oggn.com.